She stops abruptly. Even Harvey what? I ask. Even Harvey still adores Serena, just like his mother and his housekeeper? She shrugs.
When I moved in, there were still lots of her things around the place that she hadn't bothered to pack.
Like what?
Photos of the two of them dotted around the place. Some clothes of hers in the laundry. Some of her jewelry, even. I asked Harvey about it. Is she ever going to get her things shipped, or am I supposed to live with them? I was a little offended, you know. In the end, he had to do it himself, and he wasn't very happy about it. But at least I don't have to see beautiful Serena's face anymore.
I think back to what she said about the divorce being amicable, and now I wonder. Leaving these traces behind for the new wife seems kind of insensitive. Could Serena have done that on purpose?
Anyway, she sighs, I guess I'm just trying to justify why I got so angry with Diane. I told her to go, that we'd give her a month's pay in lieu of notice, and that was that. Next thing I know, I heard the door slam, and she was gone.
What did Mr. Carter say?
At first, I thought he'd be angry that I'd let Diane go, but he was good about it.
Her face relaxes.
He was about to pour me a glass of red wine when I told him. He froze, the bottle in the air. He couldn't believe it. I told him she was creeping me out, that there was something not right about that woman. I mean, who does that? Throws your employer's things away, constantly comparing me to your first wife. He winced at that, which I don't mind one bit. I swear she made me feel like what's-her-name in Rebecca, with Diane in the role of Mrs. Danvers, waiting for the right moment to push me out the window.
Last night I dreamed I went to Mandalay again.
I muse before I can stop myself.
That's the one,
she says, as if there's nothing strange about a 24-year-old housekeeper knowing her classics.
Then he said, I have a secret to tell you. And I was like, what now? I'm not the second Mrs. Carter, I'm the third. The first one is buried in the cellar or holed up in the attic. You know what he said?
What did he say?
He said, I broke the mug from Canada.
My hand flies to my mouth.
And then, she resumes, he said he never liked Diane and that she used to creep him out too, so he was glad she was gone. I couldn't believe it. I thought she was some kind of family heirloom, that she came welded to this house no matter who moved in. So, there you go.
She takes a swig of wine, then she leans in and I do the same, so that we're very close to each other. Her eyes are glassy and it dawns on me how drunk she is.
Then Harvey went upstairs to his office, and I was gazing out the window without looking at anything in particular. It was raining really hard, and there was a shape across the street completely still and exposed without an umbrella, and it was Diane. She saw me looking at her, and she looked right into my eyes, and it was like she hated me, pure hatred.
She sits back and finishes her drink.
It made me drop my wine. There was glass everywhere on the floor, and you know what? Harvey didn't believe me that she was outside, standing across the street. He said I was dreaming, that I was confused because I'd drank too much.
Well, good riddance.
Cheers to that,
she says, and we clink. But I still don't think she had anything to do with the Instagram post. Sorry. Call it a gut feeling. Just watch your back with Aaron. Like I said before, arm's length. Cool the friendship for a while and see what happens. If she thinks this is rather forward advice for a housekeeper, she doesn't say. She just gazes out the window and sighs. Chapter 23. That night, Harvey takes her out for dinner. A kind of peace offering, I suspect. While they're out, I take another look at her journal. I go over some of the older entries. There's one immediately after Diane has gone, before I started working here.
It doesn't help that I'm on my own, and to say I'm not coping would be merely pointing out the bleeding obvious. My husband comes home late. He's tired. He expects a meal, and I can hardly blame him. I found a recipe online for clam chowder, which I know Harvey loves. I managed to shop for all the ingredients, familiarizing myself with the local food stores, enjoying everyone cooing over my baby in the stroller. I had the potatoes boiling on the stove when Mia started wailing. I rushed upstairs, and by the time she was changed and soothed, the kitchen had been engulfed in smoke. I was so frazzled I couldn't even figure out where to order takeout from, or even what Harvey might like. I racked my brain trying to remember those early weeks in our relationship. There was no cook or housekeeper, although we did go out a lot. What did we eat? What was his favorite food? I remember laughing over his seafood paella at the Spanish restaurant around the corner we frequented so often. The Mexican bar where we'd get chicken wings and knock back margaritas. The Italian restaurant where he showed me how to eat pasta with a spoon and fork, which I never mastered, not without streaking tomato sauce over the walls in a pattern that would have made a forensic investigator rub her hands together with glee. In the end, I ordered pizza online. Then, the last two nights, Harvey has come home with Chinese and white curtains, just like the movies, but without the cheerful banter. Diane called again, I said. He mumbled something about having the number changed, but he won't do it because he doesn't think it's Diane. I don't know if he even believes me anymore. We're more like the couple who has been married going on 57 years and has well and truly run out of things to say. I tried to imagine this scene if Serena were here instead of me. I bet they'd be eating out of elegant, handmade, gold-leafed pottery or something. Which is when I remembered the gorgeous Asian dining set in the pantry on the top shelf. And I had to resist the urge to facepalm. I saw it the other day, still in its box, white with blue swirls of feathers and delightful little squares of porcelain for the chopsticks so they don't stain the linen. The whole set is exquisite, and I kicked myself for not remembering it before. I bet Serena would have remembered. I bet she would have laid it out beautifully on a white linen damask tablecloth. They would have eaten in the dining room, of course, with a multitude of dipping sauces in pretty lacquered dishes and fragrant jasmine tea in small round cups. I peered at him over my chop suey and tried to read his face. How long before he realizes this is hopeless? Before he turns around and tells me that he was on the rebound when he met me and selected the person who looks and acts least like Serena. Someone plump instead of slim, dark-haired instead of golden blonde, dim-witted instead of intelligent and educated. Also that he wouldn't be reminded of her every minute of the day, except that it's not working at all and he's terribly sorry, but we're going to have to call it quits. It doesn't help that I barely sleep, especially after the other night. I'm so tired that I'm afraid of going to sleep in case Mia needs me and I don't wake up. The house is a mess because I just don't have the energy to do anything about it. When I woke up this morning, I told myself that no matter what, I would burst this bubble of resentment wide open. I got so mad at myself, I started to shake. And then we were having breakfast, sitting at the same table, both of us poking at our fried eggs with the tips of our fork. Then, without warning, my inner voice said, "Is it because of Serena?" Which would be all right normally, since I have wondered that. Except that this time, my inner voice said it out loud. Harvey looked up with a look that I'm becoming depressingly familiar with, a look somewhere between puzzlement and irritation.
"Why are you so obsessed with Serena?"
"Because she is everything I am not. Because you loved her more than you love me." I don't say that out loud, but I'm glad she's gone. I'm glad I did what I did. "I want you to be happy," I said softly. "I'm frightened, I guess. That I'm going..."
"Honey, you need to go and see Dr. Malone again, please. Do it for me, okay?" I didn't get to finish the sentence.
I was going to say crazy.
Chapter 24.
Hannah is up early for once. I'm pretend cleaning her bathroom so I can grab a Xanax when I hear her out there calling me.
Ah, there you are.
She puts one hand against the door jamb.
I'm feeling better today, and I was talking to Harvey this morning. He thinks we should start Mia on solid foods.
I'm on my knees, elbow deep in the bathtub. I sit back on my heels and push a strand of hair out of my eyes. What?
I know. I don't know what's gotten into him. He says I'm babying her too much.
Are you serious? Harvey said that? She's 4 months old, Hannah. She is a baby. She flinches.
I know, but what can I say? Come on, it will be fun. We can experiment with flavors, textures. Do you think we should make pureed vegetables from scratch? Although the prepared ones might be better, the ones in little glass jars. Do they still exist? They have added vitamins. That's good, right?
We could always try both, see what Mia thinks.
We could do a tasting, put little portions in little spoons. We could line them up on the table and give it to her one by one, then come up with a rating system. Like -1 point for a nose twitch, +5 for a smile, +10 for a giggle, -100 if she cries. Although it has to be real tears.
You okay, Hannah? I ask when she finally stops talking.
Sure, I feel great. Why?
You're talking really fast.
Am I?
She cocks her head at me.
I just want to start Mia on solids today, okay? Harvey said so.
I wonder if she's on drugs. She's smiling, but it's a frozen smile, a pretend smile.
Come on, let's go to the grocery store. I'll meet you downstairs.
And just like that, she's out of the room. I get up and immediately reach for the Xanax, but it's not there. I thought we'd settled on mass-market baby food. But when I tell Hannah I'll quickly pop by Morton Williams and pick something up, she says,
"Come on, this is the very first time she'll eat something other than formula. Surely her first experience should be wholesome rather than processed."
So now we're going to the organic grocery store on 3rd Avenue. I told her once that's where I like to shop because it's organic. I never shop there. It goes without saying. The store is packed, mostly with young women in Lululemon and young men with full beards and no socks. We're standing in front of a box of yellow zucchini, next to two women who look like they've just returned from playing tennis. They both wear matching short white pleated skirts with a thin blue band on the side and white polo shirts.
I am so pleased this is where you shop. We're really supporting the local economy, Hannah says,
as if we were United Nations delegates in an emerging country on a visit to a local market. I have to look at her to see if she's joking or not. And I still can't tell.
I guess they know you here, huh? You're so lucky to have a connection to this neighborhood.
I smile with tight lips and leave her to check the ripeness of the avocados. I slide past the checkout line of people staring at their phones and right up to the woman at the register.
Hi, I shop here all the time, I whisper.
What's your name again?
Oh, hi, she says, then narrows her eyes at me like she's trying to place me. I half expect her to say,
No, you don't. But maybe because she's very busy, she whispers back, I'm Mel. Sorry, I forgot your name.
Louise, like I said, I shop here all the time.
Then I add, but I've been busy, so I haven't been here in ages, thereby contradicting myself.
You know how it is.
She gives me a quick, confused nod, clearly wanting me to get to the point. I just smile at her warmly.
You're busy. I'll leave you to it.
Then I join Hannah by the potatoes. On the way, I pop some carrots and kale into a basket to show I've been doing something.
Ready?
When we come to pay, I greet Mel brightly.
Hi, Mel. Nice earrings.
Thanks, Louise,
she chirps, and Hannah gives me a bright, toothy smile that makes her eyes squint, like she's proud of me. We're outside now, and because I'm on a winning streak, I tell her what a nice place this is to shop,
and that Mel is lovely and always tells me what the freshest vegetables are.
Hannah frowns. Aren't they all fresh?
Yes, of course. I mean, some are fresher than others at any given time. And then I stop speaking, mid-sentence, because I just heard my name. My real name.
Claire?
It's behind us, not too close, maybe 30 feet away. It's April. I smile at Hannah tightly and hurry my pace. But Hannah is pushing the stroller, and it's a nice sunny early autumn day, and we're having such a nice time, and she's in no hurry, so I have to slow down again to stay level with her.
Claire!
Go away, April. But she won't go away, will she? Because this is April, and she's not the type to give up. I'm sweating. I am rambling about nothing, about the trees, about the squeak from the wheel on the stroller, and how I'll put some oil on it when we get back. Then I hear her again.
Claire!
More insistent this time, and it's all I can do not to turn around and yell at her. Go away. Of course, Hannah has turned around, and now she's frowning at me. And I don't know if it's because I'm being weird or because she can tell it's me April is after. Although she doesn't know it's April, obviously. And I can see she's puzzled that I pretend there's nothing to see here. We're about to cross East 63rd when the red hand signal comes up, but there's no way I can stop now. I take hold of Hannah's elbow and keep walking, and the traffic light turns green when we're only halfway through, and a taxi honks angrily. It's not a good look, considering we're pushing a stroller with a four-month-old baby in it. By the time we step on the sidewalk, cars are zipping past behind us and a woman makes a tsk sound at us.
Jeez Louise, what's the rush? Hannah says.
I try to smile. Sorry, force of habit. I'm always in a rush. But we're at the house now and Hannah fiddles with something on the back of the stroller. So I quickly unclip the straps and pick up Mia.
I'll take her, she says, extending her arms.
I can't believe it's taking so long to get inside. But I fold the stroller in one quick gesture and risk a sideways glance. I can't see April, and when I close the door after me, I lean against it in relief. In the end, we don't puree kale and carrots and put them in teaspoons and rank Mia's favorite according to some weird rating system. Hannah decides she's tired after all and goes to lie down. I put the food in the fridge and then change my mind and boil some carrots. When Harvey comes home that night, I mention to him that I've prepared some pureed vegetables for Mia and that I'll give it a go tomorrow. That's nice, he says distractedly. That's what you wanted, isn't it, Mr. Carter? That I should put Mia on solid foods? And the way he looks at me, I may as well have been speaking Swahili. He has no idea what I'm talking about. Chapter 25. I'm like a drug addict. All I can think about is getting back to that notebook. I wait until they're having dinner downstairs and slip into her closet for my fix. As soon as I open the notebook, I see there's a new entry, and this one is dated. It's from yesterday. It begins with the usual.
I'm tired. I can't bear it anymore. I don't know what's wrong with me. Blah, blah, blah.
But then she writes,
every day I scour Instagram for something else. I log in with my fingernails in my mouth, my pulse racing, but there's been nothing. I told Aaron that Louise suspects her to be behind the post, and she got really angry. She swore on her mother's grave that she had nothing to do with it.
Same with the phone calls.
She wanted to come over and give Louise a piece of her mind, accusing her like that, and I had to beg her to leave it alone. I don't want this drama in my house. I said I'd talk to Louise about it myself. But the truth is, I don't know how I feel about Louise, and not just because the house is getting more and more untidy. The other day, Harvey pointed out the baseboards in the main sitting room. When's the last time Louise vacuumed up here? And have you seen the carpet on the stairwell? She needs to up her game or we'll have to get someone else. I mean that. This place is starting to look filthy.
I wouldn't have said filthy myself, but I know what he means. I am here all the time, and I don't remember the last time I even heard the vacuum cleaner. In fact, the only time I see Louise these days is in the kitchen. I never see her in any room in this house except for the nursery. If she ventures anywhere else, it's not when I'm around. And God knows I'm around. Then, this morning, she said Mia should be on solids from now on. Mia is barely 4 months old. I'm pretty sure that's a little early. She's only just started to sit up on her own. But for some reason, Louise was adamant that we should try. I went along with it, even going as far as shopping with her at the grocery store. But when we returned, I said I wanted to check with the pediatrician first and asked her to wait until I'd done so. She tried to hide it, but I could see that it made her angry. I don't know why. I think I should talk to Harvey about this. Louise is getting increasingly obsessed with my child, and I think I should tell someone. I'm beginning to think I shouldn't leave her alone with Mia so much. I hate to think what she might do.
She knows.
I can feel it twisting my gut. It's the only thing that makes sense. She's writing all these lies about me, inventing moments that never happened, twisting the truth. Later, when it's all over, Hannah will want me to see how much smarter than me she is, how she toyed with me. That's why she told me that bullshit story about wanting to be an artist and working as a nanny. She won't tell her husband what supposedly happened to her, but she'll tell me, her housekeeper. No, it doesn't add up. Hannah Carter is a liar. And all this time I thought I was the cat. Turns out I was the mouse. Chapter 26. I ring the buzzer at April's apartment. I could have used my key, but it just didn't feel appropriate. It crackles to life and her voice comes on.
Who is it?
It's me, Claire. Upstairs, she's waiting at the door, already in her tracksuit pants, her arms crossed over her chest. I'm not at my cousin's in Pittsfield. I don't have a cousin in Pittsfield. The kitchen is pristine in its cleanliness. It makes me feel like I don't live there anymore. I sit at the table and put my head in my hands.
What have you done to your hair?
I cut it, I reply without looking up.
I liked it better before. I don't like the color either.
Thanks, April.
You have my rent?
She asks. I retrieve the cash from my back pocket and put it on the table. She softens visibly and takes the chair opposite.
Why did you run away from me? I know you heard me. You pretended you didn't, and you ran off with your friend. What the hell, Claire?
Do you have something to drink? She shoots me a disappointed look, but gets up anyway. She opens the freezer and pulls out an unopened bottle of vodka.
I didn't know you liked vodka.
She drops ice cubes into two tumblers, fills them up, and sets them on the table in front of us.
I don't. I'm making an exception. I got it for you. For when you came back.
I say nothing for a moment, waiting for the punchline. She doesn't say anything else, just takes a sip, watching me over the rim of her glass, while I knock back a swig of my own. I'm not an influencer, I say, biting my bottom lip. I expect her to laugh, slap the table with the palm of her hand, and yell out, "No shit!" Instead, a faint blush grows in her cheeks. She shrugs one shoulder.
I thought some things didn't add up.
Some things?
I want to take her by the shoulders and shake her. I want to bore into her eyes and tell her, "April, honey, you need to be more discerning about who you trust." If it sounds completely implausible, it probably is. I'm in trouble, April. I tell her everything. I tell her about my parents, about where I grew up, about Hannah Wilson coming and ruining our lives. I've never spoken about this to anyone, ever, and it's hard. It gives me a touch of vertigo. Although that could be the alcohol.
It makes it hard to breathe, but it's strangely cathartic. Not unlike throwing up. I tell her about the day of the job interview and how I found Hannah again. I don't tell her about all the stalking I did, but I do tell her I've managed to get hired as her housekeeper, and Hannah thinks my name is Louise Martin.
A housekeeper?
She asks, eyes opened wide as if that's the most shocking detail of my story. She shakes her head, cups her hand around her tumbler.
I don't understand. What are you trying to achieve by working there? Do you want to hurt her?
No, of course not.
Don't I?
I mean, she is a sick woman, April. She's on the evil side of the spectrum, trust me. I laugh dryly. And if I happen to cause her unhappiness, then sure, all the better. But I'm not going to hurt her deliberately.
Physically?
No.
Okay.
I twirl my glass between my fingers, feel the corners of my mouth turn down. I want her to tell the truth. Is that too much to ask?
But how?
What she did to us, to me. I wanted her to experience it, to live with it like I did. I lean forward. I wanted to seduce her husband, have sex with him. I was going to video it on my phone, make it sound like he made me do it. I wanted to see her face when she learns that her husband is a sexual deviant who has been forcing himself on her housekeeper. I sit back. It's strange to have said it out loud, to feel the shape of the words on my tongue.
Is it true? He did that to you?
She asks. No, obviously. Jesus, April, pay attention. She tops off my glass.
Fine, so it's a lie. You don't think that's going to hurt her or him?
That's not the point. I wasn't going to do anything with that video. I just wanted her to believe it.
It was my leverage, you see. If it came out that her husband has been assaulting their young housekeeper every night, he'll be done. He'll lose his partnership for sure. They won't be able to show their faces anywhere. All that money, it will be for nothing.
Do you think Hannah Wilson would put up with that?
Of course not. She'd want me to name my price. You watch.
She pauses, absorbing it all.
And your price is?
I told you, tell the truth. She admits that everything she said about my father was a lie, and she did it to blackmail him.
I see.
And I want it on video.
Do you think she'd agree? It seems unlikely to me.
I think about this for a moment. I could go easy on her. I could give her an opportunity to justify her actions and let herself off the hook. In her version of the story, she implied her parents pushed her to do it, her father especially. He's a gambler and not a good one, apparently. She could make a statement and say it was her father's idea and that he pushed her to do this. Trust me, anyone who knows the guy will believe it. He's one greedy prick. Even now he wants money from Harvey because the guy had the misfortune to marry his daughter. You should hear him berating her on the phone because she's not paying up fast enough. So that would be my compromise. She can blame her past deeds on her naivete and a misguided obedience toward her father, as long as she admits it was all a setup.
And in exchange?
I shrug. Her husband remains the upstanding citizen that we know and love.
I don't know, Claire. Sounds pretty crazy to me. I think maybe you're in over your head there. I think you should give it up. Just quit. Come back here and forget about the whole thing.
Even if I wanted to, I can't. Not now.
Sure you can. It's not too late. Just tell her you got a better job. Whatever. Get your things and...
I can't. She knows exactly who I am. And she's framing me, April. I tell her about the diary and the lies she's been writing about me. It's more than lies, it's like she's fucking with my head. Because the things she writes about in her journal happened, but she twists it around. Like this business about me as food and going to the grocery store together. That's the day you saw me. It did happen, but it wasn't my idea. Why would she say it was? It makes no sense whatsoever. And the story that I was in the nursery spying on her or whatever, it's a complete lie. When she says I make her cups of tea that make her tired, I have no idea what she's talking about. And then she writes that I'm obsessed with Mia and she's afraid of leaving her alone with me. She's afraid of what I might do. It's a lie. She's always shoving Mia into my arms. She's constantly saying she can't cope, but I'm so good with Mia. Nothing has changed.
So why would she write those things about you?
Have you given her any reason to worry? From the look on her face, April is considering that I might be the one who's lying. I can hardly blame her. No, of course not. You have to believe me, please. I have no one else to turn to. She's silent for a moment.
I want to. I really do. But you said it yourself, Claire. You lie all the time. You've lied to me the entire time I've known you. Why should I believe you now?
I know, and you're right. But everything I've told you just now, it's the truth. I give you my word. She gives me a look as if to say, what's that worth, exactly?
You said she's trying to frame you? For what?
A wave of despair comes over me. I open my mouth, but I'm scared of saying the words. In case they're true. In case I make it real.
I don't know, but I think she's going to hurt her baby,
I whisper. She gasps, sits back. This is too much now. She's going to tell me to go. She can't help me. She won't want to get involved in this fucked up scenario with her fucked up roommate and her fucked up history. But her face grows serious and she tops off our glasses.
Did she say that in her diary?
No, but that's the point, you see. She keeps saying I might hurt Mia, that she's worried about me being around her baby. But when Hannah and I are together, she's the opposite. She wants me to take care of Mia. She keeps telling me what a great job I'm doing and how helpful it is to her. She finds it hard. She's tired all the time. Maybe she's incredibly depressed. Maybe she only got knocked up to get Harvey. Either way, I don't think she wants her child anymore. And she's figured out who I really am, but she's not telling anyone about that. Instead, she's writing down these lies about Louise, I make air quotes around Louise, and her behavior towards Mia. Maybe she's telling Harvey that she thinks Louise is obsessed with Mia. Then one day Mia will disappear or something terrible will happen to her, and Hannah will point the finger at me, and everyone will find out that I'm not Louise Martin after all. I'm Psycho Claire who hates Hannah's guts. And Hannah will get away with it. I drop my face in my hands.
You really believe that?
April asks after a long silence. I don't know, I say between my fingers. I don't know what to think. But whatever she's trying to do, she's got me in her sights. She's setting me up for something, I'm sure of it. After a while, she says,
someone called me asking questions about you.
I snap my head up. Who?
I don't know, but it was a woman. She said she was from the Department of Health and this was their annual survey. She asked me a bunch of innocuous questions like my full name and address.
I close my eyes briefly. I can just imagine April answering questions truthfully, as thoroughly as she possibly can. I brace myself for the rest.
And how many adults live here? I said two, since technically you still live here. She asked for your full name, then she asked for your occupation.
You didn't say I was an influencer, did you? I blurt out.
No, I said you worked in a doctor's office. She asked how much time you spend here. I said you live here, but right now you're staying with your cousin in Pittsfield.
She shoots me a look. I look at my hands, pick at the skin around my nails.
Sorry. Whatever. She wanted to know how long you'd been gone, what your phone number was, your social security number, as if I'd know that. But at that point I said, is Claire sick? Because her cousin has pneumonia, and they're from the Department of Health. So maybe it's more than just pneumonia. Maybe it's a terrible infectious disease, like Ebola or something, and they're trying to isolate it. Maybe you're in quarantine. I cocked my head at her.
Really? You thought that?
She waves a hand in front of her face. Anyway, she didn't reply. I mean, she didn't say whether you were sick or not. But then she asked what you look like.
How long ago was this?
I don't know, a week, I think. Maybe more, like 10 days. It just didn't sound right. I said to her, what do you care what my roommate looks like? Are you sure you're from the Department of Health? But she hung up on me. So weird. I Googled it, and it turns out that the Department of Health really does do an annual survey. But they're automated. I mean, they don't use real people. It's more like press one for this and press two for that. And they don't ask personal questions.
Why didn't you tell me?
Hello? Are you kidding me right now? I've sent you so many texts, Claire. I left you messages. Either you don't reply, you don't text, or when you do, it's like, I'll talk to you later. And when I call your name on the street, you pretend you don't hear me and run away from me.
Sorry. I'm sorry. You're right. I think back to 10 days ago. This would be after Diane showed up screaming, after she mentioned the issue with my work form, and after I asked to be paid cash.
She's known for a while. I think you should go to the police. Tell them everything you know.
I can't do that. She'll deny it.
She'll say, as far as she's concerned, my name is Louise Martin.
I scoff. It's me who'll get arrested.
Why won't you just leave? Go back tonight and tomorrow get your things, leave a note that you're not coming back.
Then what's to stop her from hurting her baby tomorrow and say I did it?
We decide that there's nothing to be done right now and it's late. Almost 4 in the morning. But at least no matter what happens next, April knows, and that means the world to me.
You need to find proof, she says. Take photos of the diary. Document everything you can. Let me know of anything I can do, okay?
I don't know what I've done to deserve April. I stay the night there in my old room. When I leave the next morning, April hugs me and doesn't let go.
You can always come back here. You know that.
Thank you, I mumble into her hair. She still doesn't let go. And I can safely say this is the longest hug I've had since I was 13 years old.
Chapter 27.
I pull my cleaning trolley out of the elevator on the top floor. But whereas normally I'd leave it on the landing like a prop and put it away an hour later, now I look like I've remembered what my job is. Cleaning is what is going to get me into every corner of the house, and not just the bedrooms. Like April said, I need proof. If I could find something that shows she knows who I really am, that would be a start. It's good timing, too. I'm in the main living room, or whatever they call it, when Hannah appears in the doorway.
Louise, when you have a moment, could you take a look along the baseboards here? Harvey noticed it needed vacuuming, and you know how he is around his art. I know you haven't been here long, and I understand it takes a while to get settled in. There's an awful lot to do in this place. Let me know if there's anything I can do to help.
Sure thing, I say. She blinks.
Did you have fun last night? I noticed you went out.
Is that a problem?
No, of course not.
Well, then I'll get on with the baseboards.
Thanks. Is everything okay?
Everything is fine, thank you. She nods.
Also, Harvey asked about his shirts. He says they haven't been laundered in a while.
I am not superhuman, Anna. She chuckles as if I'm joking. Then she grows serious and cocks her head at me, one hand on her hip, the way she does.
Excuse me?
Maybe you could send out for the shirts and everything else that needs to be laundered. That's what my previous employer did. No one expected me to be the cook, the cleaner, the nanny, and the laundromat all rolled into one.
Your previous employer did that? Sent the laundry out?
Yes.
Oh, I see. All right, we can do that. That's no problem.
Then I remember something April said.
Just behave as normal. Don't let her think that you know. Just concentrate on finding out what she wants from you. What she's setting you up for.
I run my hand over my face. I'm so sorry. I just had a bad night. My mother.
Oh, please, no. What happened?
She's really upset. I was with her. I sigh. It's back. Her hand flies to her mouth.
The cancer?
She blurts out. Yes.
I'm so sorry. Do you want to take the rest of the day off? Take a couple days if you need to.
I put one hand up. No, it's fine. Really, I need to get back to work. It's the only thing that will distract me right now. She looks at me with something like pity, hands laced together.
All right, let me know if there's anything I can do, okay? And of course, don't worry about the shirts. I'll get it organized.
She has one foot out the door when she turns around and says,
and when you have a moment, your social security number.
And I swear I see a trace of a smile. I'm woken by Mia crying. It's coming through the receiver next to my head. It's so strident, it jolts me out of bed and I run upstairs in my bare feet. She's in her crib, her little face purple from screaming. She's kicked her blankets off, and when I put my hand on her head, I find she's burning. I pick her up and walk her, gently bouncing her, but she doesn't calm down. I don't understand why Hannah isn't here. I put her back in the crib, whispering promises. I'll be right back. I'm not going far. I'll just go and get Mommy. And tiptoe into Hannah's room and stand next to her bed. I remember then that Harvey is away overnight, and it's just Hannah. She has a pillow over her head. For a moment, I wonder if she's dead. I raise a corner. Hannah?
What?
She mumbles. It's Mia. She pulls the pillow off her head, but doesn't open her eyes. What's wrong? Her voice is thick, and I wonder if she's been drinking. She's got a fever. I expect her to get up now, but instead she mumbles,
there's some baby Tylenol in the bathroom.
She still hasn't opened her eyes, and now she drags the pillow back over her head. I consider pressing down on it with both hands for a few seconds, maybe even a minute, see if that'll get her attention. Then I shake the thought out of my head because the leap between me thinking of doing something and actually doing it isn't so much a leap as a stumble. Mia's one-piece sleeper is damp from her sweat. I take it off, change her into a clean diaper and a lighter t-shirt. Then I find the thermometer. Her temperature is 100 degrees Fahrenheit exactly. I bring her downstairs to my room so I can look up on my phone whether I should call a doctor or not. I give her some Tylenol, and after some Googling, I decide to wait. I close my door to keep her out of the draft, and we sit on my bed, me leaning against the wall, rocking her slowly in my arms. I try to remember what my mother sang to me when I was little, but nothing comes up. All I can think of is the theme song to Orange is the New Black. So I sing that. Mia watches me with eyes wide open, not even blinking. And just as I decide that is not a good sign, her eyelids close like one of those old-fashioned dolls. Only her little chest is heaving with the aftermath of her sobs. You're better now? I ask. I take her temperature again, but I can tell she's cooled down. 98.5 Fahrenheit. Okay, that's great. Every time I stop talking or singing, her eyes open again and her little face crumples. So I keep talking. I ask her what she wants to do when she grows up. I throw out a few options. Race car driver? Astronaut? But these are all very dangerous occupations, so I instruct her not to even think about it. Instead, I suggest president, because they have lots of bodyguards. Her eyes snap open, and I sense it too. Like a shift in the air, the flutter of a wing. I turn to the door. The light underneath is interrupted by a dark patch. A shadow. I squint, trying to figure out what it is, and then it moves, making my heart explode. Is someone there? I say. Mia is still warm and fluttery, so I leave her on the bed, one pillow on either side of her. The shape is gone. I open the door slowly and peer outside. Is someone there? I whisper again, my heart pounding behind my ears. Mia has gone back to sleep, a little bubble of sound popping from her lips. I go out into the corridor and close the door behind me. I move silently, quickly, and when I get to the bottom of the stairs, I see something, a fleeting shadow. I think I'm going to be sick. I remember Hannah telling me about a night not unlike this one, when she found a lamp left on, even though she could swear it was off. She insisted Diane had been there that night. What if she was right? I ball my hands into fists as I slowly go up the stairs. I reach Hannah's room without running into any burglars and go inside. She's asleep, or pretending to be, because the covers are different than they were before, like she's thrown them off and put them back on hastily. I'm tempted to pull them off violently like a magician revealing his assistant who was there all the time, and in one piece. I bend down and peer at her face. Her mouth is slightly opened and I feel her breath on my chin. What the fuck do you want, Hannah? I whisper. When I get back downstairs, I have to rest against the door and let my heart slow down, get my breath back. I check Mia's temperature again. It's down to 98. I have some vodka in the drawer and I'm about to take a swig straight from the bottle, just to calm my nerves. But my eyes fall on Mia, and I put the bottle back untouched. I'm pondering whether to take her back upstairs and put her in her own bed, or keep her here with me, when something catches my eye by the foot of my bed. I crouch down on all fours to pick it up. I turn it around in the palm of my hand. It's a pill, dark red, with the letter A followed by a tilde etched onto it. I have no idea where this pill came from, but I'm fairly sure it's not for me. So I guess it might be left over from when Diane was here. I pop it inside an empty candy wrapper and slip it in the top drawer. Chapter 28. I've thought about it all night, and I think I know why she didn't come into my room. She must have come to see about Mia, then realized everything was fine. I was on top of it, so to speak. And she may as well go back to bed before I realized she was there. By the time I came up, it would have been ridiculous and embarrassing to admit any of it. But this morning I am waiting for her to say something because Mia slept with me all night, and I barely closed my eyes. She's awake now, back in her crib, and has no temperature anymore. She flashes a happy smile at me and does that thing she does with her hands, lifting them in the air and wriggling her fingers. I grab one hand and kiss it. She laughs. She tastes of milk. Hannah walks in, still in her silk pajamas, smiling.
Good morning, Louise. Did you sleep well?
I have to say, I'm impressed. It takes a certain discipline to look so sincere, so totally sure of yourself, even though you know you've been caught. Sometimes I think Hannah is made of steel. Not really. Mia was not well, as you know. I stayed up all night with her.
Oh, God, you should have woken me.
I tilt my head and look at her. I did. I tried.
Really? I don't remember.
You couldn't have tried very hard. What was wrong with her?
I squint at her. She had a fever. You told me to give her some baby Tylenol. I did.
Oh, thank you. I don't know why I don't remember any of it.
She laughs, and I'm thinking, because you're batshit crazy, I'd say. Then later she says,
I'm going out this evening with Aaron.
She puts a hand up.
I know. Don't say anything. You don't think I should trust her. But I still don't believe she had anything to do with it. We're having dinner, then we're going to a show. I haven't told anyone else, so if there's a shocking Instagram post of me snorting cocaine tomorrow, I'll know you were right.
She laughs. I just pull my lips away from my teeth in what I hope is an approximation of a smile.
Anyway, if you're going out this morning, would you get more baby Tylenol from the pharmacy? There wasn't a lot left to begin with.
I managed not to tell her to fuck off, so that's good. At the pharmacy, I pull out the tablet I found under my bed. I show it to the woman behind the counter. Can you tell what this is? I ask. She says she has to get the pharmacist. I drum my fingers on the counter and wait. She then returns with a thin woman in a white lab coat and glasses. I show her the tablet, which she sets down on the counter.
Where did you get it? She asks.
I found it in my bedroom. I can't remember what it is. Can you tell?
Zolpidem tartrate. Brand name, Ambien. Controlled release. You have a prescription for this?
Ambien. That's a sleeping tablet, right? I put my hand out for it, but she doesn't give it back.
It's a sedative, yes. Was there anything else?
No, thank you. Hannah is having her bath, so I get my phone ready to take a photo and take the notebook out of its hiding place. I'm on the floor on my knees, and suddenly I hear her. She's out of the bath, and I was so engrossed in what I was reading I forgot to listen. I quickly take photos of the pages and shove the journal back in the cavity. I could walk out, empty-handed, pretend I was tidying something, whatever. I could hide behind the coats. Or I could kill myself right here and now. But then I hear the taps again, and I know she's back in her bathroom. So I hurry out of the room, my heart clattering. And back in my bedroom, I sit on my bed and check the photos I took.
I'm really, really worried. Last night, I woke up in the middle of the night and went to check on Mia. But as soon as I entered the nursery, I knew something was wrong. I leaned over her crib and she wasn't there. I can never describe what that felt like, seeing the crib empty like that. It's the most frightening thing in the world. I cried out and ran downstairs to wake Louise, and there was Mia asleep on Louise's bed. I almost fainted with relief. When I asked Louise what she was doing there, she mumbled something about Mia being sick. Why didn't you wake me up? Surely I should be woken if Mia is sick. She made up excuses that made no sense, like Mia had a temperature. But when I picked her up, she was fine, just asleep. I took her out of there immediately because that's the other thing. Her room is like a pigsty. I know that technically it's her room, and I wouldn't want to intrude on her privacy, but this was just too much. Dirty underwear on the floor. I even spotted a bottle of vodka poking out from under the bed. It wouldn't surprise me if it was one of Harvey's. This morning I woke up woozy and sick. I had a shower cold enough to make my teeth chatter, but it's better than a hot shower, which would leave me even worse, slow and confused. I try not to look at myself in the mirror, but how can I avoid them? There are too many of them. I'm so pale, I'm gray. I have dark rings tinged with purple under my eyes, even though I sleep all the time. I know that today is Monday and that I should check with Louise when my next doctor's appointment is. She said she'd organized it. Then I ask her about it and she says she already told me. But she hasn't. Has she? Is it me who's going crazy? She brought me tea again this morning, even though she knows I prefer coffee. But she says I can't have coffee. That's what the doctor said. I don't understand why. And anyway, when did the doctor say that? I took the cup downstairs and put it in the dishwasher.
The coffee machine was almost pulsating to me from the counter.
"Just one," it said. "What harm could one little cup of coffee do? It didn't have to be strong. It would help me focus." I did it, threw caution to the wind. Even just smelling the aroma made my heart flutter. But that's okay. Just little sips. With a bit of luck, I finished it before Louise returned. I know she means well, but I wasn't in the mood to be scolded. "I'm going to tell Dr. Malone when I see her next. She'll know what to do. Because I'm frightened, really frightened. I don't know if it's me or her. Is it normal to wake up in terror that your baby is about to, what, be taken? Be sick? Die? Maybe she'll think I've got that thing. What is it again? Postpartum. I can't think anymore. My brain, it's not working as it should. If I tell her that I'm scared someone is going to hurt Mia, what will she do? Will she tell someone? Will they take her away from me? No, surely not. And anyway, Mia is fine. It's me who's turned into a zombie version of myself. It's me who's afraid of the dark. Afraid of my own shadow. Afraid of the phone ringing. Afraid of a knock on the door. Afraid of what Louise might do to all of us. Mia. Harvey. Me. Louise wants to hurt all of us. She won't give up until she hurts us all.
I throw my phone on the floor and it lands on a discarded pair of jeans. It doesn't even break. Chapter 29. That's it. I can't waste any more time. She's crazy and dangerous. I should have seen this before. I should have done what I set out to do as soon as I got here. Now I think I didn't try hard enough with Harvey. Like an idiot, I got caught up in seeing her up close. I wanted her to suffer. I ended up playing stupid games at her expense, like the Instagram post and the scary phone calls. I was being petty, and petty has landed me in deep shit. Now it's me that's being played, but I don't know how or why, and it's scaring me. If she's going to use me to hurt her family, I need something to stop her. I should have tried harder, but that doesn't mean I can't get it done now. Hannah leaves for her date with Aaron, and I'm on my own. I slip into Harvey's study, quickly assess the room. The best view of the desk is from the shelf behind the door, and that's where I position my cell. I'll get it down as soon as he gets home. There's a photo of Hannah on the desk in a simple silver frame. She's standing on a beach, her hair blown by the wind. I put it face down. Upstairs, I check on Mia, then get changed into my special lacy bra and panties, the ones balled up at the back of the drawer, and my black uniform. It used to be tighter on me, but now there's at least an inch of loose fabric around my waist. I unbutton the top, down to below my breasts, so there's no misunderstanding this time. I also undo some buttons at the bottom, so that when I walk, you can see most of my thigh. I wonder what Dominic would say if he saw me like this. Not much, probably. He'd be too busy tearing my clothes off. What else? Mascara. I'm not used to putting it on, and some of it smudges on the corner of my eyelid. But it gives me a kind of slutty look, so I match it on the other side. I finish the look with a quick swipe of red lipstick. By the time Harvey comes home, I'm ready. I'm in the kitchen, leaning against the breakfast island. He calls out hello, but I don't reply. He drops his keys on the console table and takes the elevator upstairs. I glance at the video monitor and watch him walk into the nursery. He doesn't stay long, maybe 5 minutes, then silence. I begin to worry. I won't have another opportunity like this, just Harvey and me alone in the house. And I don't want Hannah to come home and find me dolled up like this. God knows what she'll think. The truth, most likely. Finally, he comes back downstairs, and I let out a breath of relief. I am already in his office, and I set the video to record. Then I lean against the wall opposite with both hands behind my back. He doesn't see me at first. He sets his leather bag on the desk and walks around to his big leather chair.
Jesus, Louise, he blurts.
He adjusts his glasses. I smile sweetly, innocently, but not too much.
Hello, Mr. Carter.
I walk up to him slowly, making sure to display as much leg as possible. I play with the top buttons of my blouse, but my eyes never leave his. And when I reach him, I place my hand flat on his chest, then take his tie and pull him up playfully.
I've been looking forward to this so much, I whisper.
What are you doing?
You'll see.
We're at the front of his desk now. I know